Taking the Wheel. How did I get from being who I'd been raised to be to someone who got kicked out? As a Christian kid, you really don't have a lot of choice in much of anything, not even what shirts to wear or what food to eat. But like with a lot of people, a change happened right about when I got my driver's license. When I was in the middle of my teen years, as one does, I started to take charge of my life and my growth just a bit. I made choices. I opted out of some things for my own reasons, even if I didn't fully understand why. I was very conscious of eyes on me at this time, and pressure mounting against my choices, because I was starting to learn how to look after myself, was starting to find what I needed. I think this is what happens when a child starts to grow up. An increasing cascade of only partially understood choices. An individual path slowly becoming obvious. The teenager taking further steps in the way he should go, the way that's right for him or her. I think it's an incredibly harmful thing to interfere with this delicate process, to bring a child up in anything other than the tenor of his way, to try to mold the child overmuch into something that is entirely your own idea and not very them. So I started making choices. I eventually refused to play sports at all because there was never any joy in them for me. But I started taking long walks late at night under the trees and stars and moon because there always was. I started unabashedly talking to people, mainly, only one at a time, or in very small groups, avoiding crowds and noise altogether, turning my back on group activities. I stopped eating what my mother cooked and started cooking for myself, learning to cook things she didn't. Then I didn't have to eat at specific times. If I was up all night practicing my insomnia, I just might need lunch at 3 a.m. If I slept through breakfast, I just might need that at 3 p.m. To sensible onlookers, this was all really foolish. How would I ever hold down a job or go to school? At university, I took a lot of evening classes, the single 3-hour session style class instead of 2 1.5-hour lectures each week, even if there was meeting that night. And throughout my 20s, I did nothing but shift work, with a lot of evening and night and weekend shifts, all spinning around the clock without any real pattern, even if there was meeting that night. So I built routines that fit my actual life and worried less about what people might think of it all, eventually. And I did the same thing at meeting. I started refusing the one-size-fits-all ways to view God and life and everything else, along with those vintage 1923 ideas, fashion tips, and lifestyle constraints. And I started actually going to actual God for that stuff, to see if I could get something that was more real and more workable, something that was alive. Something for my spirit, because I knew deep down that I was starving. Something was missing, no matter how many meetings I attended. I needed to be saved, even though I'd already asked Jesus into my heart. In fact, looking back, I think he was saving me the whole time. The meetings increasingly became empty celebrations of things meeting wasn't actually supplying me. And I was increasingly resentful of being required to celebrate things I knew weren't being delivered. It felt like mocking or sneering to attempt anything of the kind. And I found that sometimes, simply not attending meeting seemed to really make a lot of emotional and spiritual problems melt away like snow in June, because our time was heavily defined for us. Louisa writes,
"Socially, I felt like I had a time card where they expected me to, quote, punch in for every one of the 5 meetings a week, plus young people's, plus whatever social occasion was happening, many. I remember one 3-week period where every single one of the 21 nights was planned for me. I hated it, but had no clue how to successfully get out of it. In other words, without me feeling guilty. Once I missed gospel meeting because I had a throbbing headache, and a guy about my age said to me the next day at the Brethren Publishing House, 'Jesus was there last night. Where were you?'"
I heard that one a lot, too. "Jesus was there last night. Where were you?" Also, variations upon, "You don't get to wait for the bus after school with us because you've missed young people's meeting the last 2 times." I withdrew from a lot of things. Downside was boredom and isolation. Upside was I started to rapidly get to know and turn into my own person. This drew a fair bit of disapproval. I heard some lectures about the dangers of sheep wandering off from the flock, not wandering from the shepherd. It was assumed we were to find the shepherd by following the flock. There was a price to be paid for all of these anti-group decisions, of course. When you stop going with the current, you'd better be able to swim against it. Refusing to play sports meant I was unable to connect to almost any male people my age, and likewise, unable to show off and display my dating potential to female people my age. Make no mistake, in the world outside my church, being a good dancer or singer led women to suspect one might be an equally skilled lover. This being absolutely denied to us meeting teens meant that there was only the one remaining advertisement of future bedroom prowess left. Sports. Other guys got sweaty and wowed girls with their relentless, driving, surging, thrustingly unceasing feats of agility and endurance and strength. It's what we had, not being Amish and not having barn raisings. And I was staying home, or sitting off to one side bored to death while the interminable sports were played. Of course, some girls actually were drawn to guys with strong, confident opinions on scripture. Increasingly, though, my opinions were the wrong ones. My thinking tasted foreign and unfamiliar. My thinking got less black and white, more nuanced and harder to follow, and it equally got less and less conventional and satisfied with simple answers. This was certainly a panty tightener. Locked 'em right on. At least at my youth group, there were members of the opposite sex. Melody writes to tell me,
I dated a wonderful Lutheran guy when I was about 20, but my parents were so negative about him because he didn't go to the gospel hall. I went to a really small hall, about 20 people, and there were no single guys. I wasn't allowed to go to church with this boyfriend, since it would mean missing my own service. I eventually ended up marrying a guy I met at another gospel hall. Everyone was thrilled, no one told us to get counseling. He ended up having an affair and leaving.
Anne writes,
it was pretty challenging to have a boyfriend. In retrospect, it sucked that when I came home and told them I was dating someone, I immediately knew they were depressed, disappointed, unhappy. Not really fair to a young adult entering her first relationship. To know that unless the other person is in the meeting, it's a no-go for your parents, and any mention of your boyfriend will be upsetting to them in the extreme. In fact, when the relationship ends, to know they are happy is maddening. I was 30 and had a really hard time telling my parents that I was going to take a cross-country trip with my boyfriend. It was super hard for me to stand up to them and say, we are sharing a tent, deal with it. I married him because we wanted to move in together, and I didn't have the guts to do it without getting married first. So yeah, they have a lot of power over me. I would like to think it's diminished, but it's not gone. They give me a lot of rope since I'm married. They mostly leave me alone. It doesn't stop them from asking if I'm reading my Bible. I mostly lie when I'm asked that. So yeah, I'm still afraid to tell them the truth. I also struggle with whether it's worth sharing with them that I don't think homosexuality is wrong, or more accurately, that I think it's wrong to say homosexuality is wrong.
Sometimes it goes like that. You do what everyone says. Then when it doesn't work out, suddenly you're asking, where is everybody? Who wants to explain what just happened? I did exactly what you said. It didn't go well at all. What do I do now? Crickets. A lone tumbleweed rolls across the screen. All too many Brethren young people tried to alleviate the parental disapproval by marrying someone they were already having sex with, only to have the marriage end in divorce. This is really Anne's own story. But many of us just retreated from everything. In my late teens, to a large degree, I faded away into the background and was unnoticed and generally forgotten by everyone. All that was noticed or remembered was that, for some mysterious reason, I was weird. In some troubling, indefinable way. I didn't know why I wasn't normal, but increasingly I came to realize I couldn't become normal either. I hadn't been designed that way. And I never learned what it's like to work as a group or a team, striving for the same goal and experiencing any form of success as a group. I've always been on my own, looking after myself with random people asking why I was not the same as they were, and why I was doing other stuff they'd never considered. How can you not love blank? Why would anyone want to blank? I don't think I've ever been part of a group or a team and had it end well. Some of us are like that. Some of us have no group skills and in fact suspect that groups aren't designed to meet our needs at all, just as we have little to offer a group. Some of us seem designed to watch from the sidelines. A lot more can be seen from there too, I can tell you. It adds an undeniable clarity of perspective. Even at home, I was drawing away. Cooking my own meals meant I had taken from my mother her only real way of showing me she loved me. A bit later in life, I started getting my own cars fixed at garages and finally could afford cars that didn't need to be fixed very often. This removed what had been my father's only real way of showing me he loved me. When you decide to go it alone and look after yourself, it may be necessary, but it costs something. Systems and collectives exist to try to share resources and make things convenient. If you can't belong, you have to do things yourself. For example, refusing the one-size-fits-all belief packages on offer at church and moving past 1923 in terms of lifestyle, old was as holy to them as modern was sinful, did that too. It meant that I could still read the Bible, I could still pursue a relationship with God, but I'd be doing it alone. I would not be allowed to teach or help out or even socialize at the church, and eventually I would be excommunicated and shunned for life. I've never been asked to teach children or teenagers anything by Christians. In the real world, it's my full-time job. Boo-hoo, one might say. Snivel, snivel. Sad stuff. But as Jed Bartlett might well ask, what's next? Good question. For me, anyway, first I had to gain the courage to reject the sports, the family, and church stuff without doubting that I was headed somewhere good, without faltering in the belief that there was something else available, other than all that stuff that clearly didn't work for me. That was tough. It has taken most of my life, because for most of my life, I have been desperately trying to convince uncaring legions that what they're offering doesn't work for me, that it just really, really doesn't, but not to be insulted about that. And so, is it okay with them if I do something a bit different that might work for me? It's not. And for some reason, I've always hammered away at people, telling them things they don't want to hear, telling them that I tried all their stuff, telling them I was starting to suspect that they themselves didn't take their stuff as seriously as I had, telling them that I didn't think they ever really put what they were selling under the microscope nor to the test. Because I knew that not only didn't it work for me, it didn't look like it was working for them or their kids. I did this for most of my young adult life, and it didn't get me anywhere. I indulged in various exercises in 90s-style postmodern Christian deconstruction and self-expression. I spent my time on making cartoons, comedy songs, funny videos, scathing blogs, serious essays, tell-all books, in internet forum marauding, and that kind of thing. And while these may have been amusing and thought-provoking for some portion of the population, they really weren't felt to be anything most good people respect as moving on or positive. And they haven't quite cut it for me entirely either. They are not the end of a story. So what's next, indeed? If step one was, seriously, this really, really doesn't work for me, and step two was not needing permission from others to go on a quest for something that would work while developing a working it for use when people harangued and attacked and vilified, shunned, excommunicated me, and questioned my commitment to God and my sanity as well, then what would step three look like? What next? There really is a part three to this book. It can't possibly live up to all this hyping it, though.